You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I shouldn't think stuff like this. They're saying
something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
Practice.
Welcome to another edition of Positive Cynicism. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. Before we get into this episode, I want to remind you again about all the other shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. You have My 1-2-3 Cents with Kevin Hunsberger. You have Nerds United with Greg Mahochko. You also have the Five Heart Podcast with Greg Mahochko. Yeah, that's pretty much all of them. But give them a listen. Lots of interesting topics across the board here at Jittery Monkey. And I really don't have anything to say in this opening. This is just mainly a formality to bridge the gap into the next commercial break and then come back with the new monthly guest host, Eric Bennett, who will be joining us the second week of every month to discuss some different aspect of pop culture. This month, we're looking at Comic-Con 2018 and kind of previewing it and discussing what to expect or not to expect in some cases. And if you've never been to Comic-Con, this will give you a good primer. If you have been to Comic-Con, you can listen and tell us what you think. You know, hit us up on Twitter or write a review on iTunes or Podbean or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you listen to the shows. Just let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you would like to hear on future episodes. I'm going to stop babbling. Let's just hit the commercial break and let's come back and discuss Comic-Con 2018.
Hi, this is Greg Mahochko, the host of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. And over the years that I've been running the Nerds United show, I've been fortunate enough to speak with many of my talented friends, both artists and writers, creators of comic books. But I've also spoken with some more recognizable names in comics and entertainment. Legendary artist Greg Land. Hey, we Greg's got to stick together. Writer Colin Bunn, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and comic book creator DMC Daryl McDaniels. The Flash of yesteryear, and in more recent memory, Flash's dad, John Wesley Shipp, and a lot more. And I encourage you to subscribe to the Nerds United podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can check it out anytime you want on jitterymonkey.com. And as founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, I really do appreciate your support. When you share a podcast, you help get our little corner of the podcasting world out to even more people. So anytime you do that, you really don't know how much we appreciate it. So share away.
All right. Welcome back to Positive Cynicism. I don't have a name for this series yet. We need to get a series because I am joined by Eric Bennett, who's been on the show multiple times, friend of the show, and now an official permanent monthly co-host. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
I've been teasing this series on the evolution of summer blockbusters for the last couple of months, and we keep pushing it off. It's like, I guess it's like our Matt Damon, or the Matt Damon to our Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah. I know it's going to happen, but it's a lot to take on.
Yeah, and it's just things have come up and other topics pop up from month to month. And we're like, oh, I want to hit on this real quick, and because I want to kind of somewhat be timely if you're listening when the shows drop. Which is brings us to this month's series, but we have to come up with a name for these series and some artwork and some clever stuff. So
I'll brainstorm when I get home.
All right, sounds good. This episode originally dropped on July 17th, and July, I believe, 18th is the preview night, and the 19th through 22nd is the 2018 San Diego World Famous Comic Con, and this is your 14th Comic Con.
I think so. I think 2005, I went for one day. So this will be 14 in a row.
Wow. And if you go back and look at the archives last year, we, along with a couple other friends, did a post-recap show of Comic-Con and tried to explain to me, who I've been there, I believe, five times, but my experience is much different than yours. You go for the full 4 or 5 days, camp out, get as much done as you can. And I go mainly to people watch and pick up free swag that I throw away as soon as I get home. This year, we were talking a couple weeks ago that this year's Comic-Con seems to be a little lackluster in what has been promoted so far. So,
yeah, it's oh yeah, sorry, what
were you saying? I was just going to say, can you expand on why you think it's a little lackluster?
Well, it's mostly what other people are saying. So there's a popular blog, SDCC blog, hello to those guys, that do podcasts, and they talk about the build-up, and it's all about who's going to be there. We know that The Walking Dead's usually there, and Game of Thrones is there. Marvel is usually always there. Star Wars has been there before. But this year, all those guys aren't there. So, and this is mostly a Hall H thing, which is their big hall that holds 6,500 people. So that typically sets the pace. So when you have something that's the biggest of the big, a lot of people avoid those things, but that creates the buzz. Like, are you in line for that? What was it like? What did you guys end up doing? Did you see the so-and-so? So all of that, not all of it, but the big players are kind of gone. So we're left with like some offsites, which we can talk about, some parties here and there, which are usual. And then there's a couple things in Hall H that I'm going to do. But it seems like there's a little bit more time to do things this year. The decisions are a little bit easier to make than they were before, where you would plan everything around those big events, because those big players, Marvel, Star Wars, Game of Thrones, HBO, they're not there. So that is making it a little bit, it's putting a little bit of doubt in some people as to how crazy and how awesome it's going to be.
Okay. Well, let's start with Marvel and, I guess, Star Wars to an extent right now. Marvel, they just had Ant-Man versus Wasp come out 2 weeks prior to Comic-Con, 2 or 3 weeks. And they don't have anything coming out until next March with
No, actually, it is Captain Marvel. Marvel in March, Infinity War a month or two after that.
Okay, which is the the one that's teased at the end of Infinity War. Is that Captain Marvel? I'm trying to, with the thing with Brie Larson.
Yep, that's the Captain Marvel signal.
Okay, I was confusing Captain Marvel with Shazam.
Yeah.
Which Shazam is DC.
That will be at Comic-Con, which we can talk about.
Yeah. Marvel, okay, because Marvel doesn't have anything until March, which even though it is 8, 9 months away, Comic-Con does usually promote things a year in advance, because I just saw something that's coming out. I think it too is going to be there, which will be in September of next year.
I don't think I read that. That would make sense.
Yeah. But Marvel is owned by Disney. Star Wars is owned by Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Disney has their own D23 celebration in Anaheim every year. Do you think, and I believe it's been the past couple of years where Marvel hasn't had as big of a presence as they used to. Do you think that is Disney just pulling out and being like, well, why spend money on someone else's con when we can wait and do a big presentation at our own con to get more people to come to that?
Well, that's kind of the theory. I haven't been to D23. I know it's popular, but from what I understand, D23 is, I think it's $400 or $500. It's some convention I've looked into, and I've never been motivated to go to it. But I know the people that go to that are Disney fanatics. But it seems like a separate convention. Like, the people that go to the conventions, the WonderCon and LA Comic Con and in San Diego, like, they all tour those kind of mass pop culture things, which have a little bit of everything. The D23 and the Star Wars Celebration really cater to that group. So I don't think it's so much that. I think with Marvel, they already promoted Infinity War last year. It was kind of a more low-key panel than I thought it would be, actually. And I don't think they need to promote the next Infinity War. They've already talked about Infinity War. We've already seen the movie now. And Captain Marvel, I strongly believe, being a month or two, I think they have some up their sleeves with Captain Marvel. Just a theory that if it's out a month or two before Infinity War, and she's cosmic, it has to lead into the events of Infinity War. So why talk about it? You're going to spoil it. We already know about Infinity War. Keep that. I like that they're keeping that a secret. So if they have this huge void of titles, like you say, for 8 months, and then you have something that leads right into something else we've seen, you don't really need to be in San Diego to talk about that. And if you did, you'd probably ruin it for some people. So that's why I think Marvel's not there. As far as Star Wars is concerned, their next movie, apparently they put all their solo, no pun intended, movies on hold. So Kathy Kennedy's kind of taken her licks recently. So I kind of believe that Star Wars isn't there because their next movie isn't out to what, December of next year?
Yeah.
They can still go to another Comic-Con in July. So I really think with Marvel, I mean, it's all Disney, really. But I think it's this totally intentional hole in their schedule and that other factor about the other Comic-Con that is causing them not to show up. Not that, oh, we have our own convention. Why don't you go to that?
So it'd be more like you don't have to promote something every single year. You take a year off, you build up the buzz. Like you said, Infinity War Part 2 doesn't need the same buzz that the promotion that Infinity War 1 needs.
Would they be promoting what essentially is one single movie? You've already promoted Infinity War. You've already been there. So you're going to promote Captain Marvel? You're going to hold a room of 7,000 people for Captain Marvel? I mean, I think everybody would show up for it. But, yeah, they left a huge hole in the excitement for Hall H. And it looks like DC and Warner Brothers are trying to fill it. That's something else we can talk about.
Okay.
But it's we're wondering who's going to step in and take some of that. Because typically what happened with Marvel is that DC and Marvel were on the same day. So no one really knew. Were people in the room for DC because they were waiting for Marvel? Because nobody was really leaving. So the conventional wisdom was that the room was full because of Marvel. And that there was also a lot of DC fans. But now that DC is on its own, we'll see if they can fill the room. And keep it full.
Yeah, well, let's segue into that. DC has Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Shazam, or all this stuff.
Much more.
And I forgot to look at the days when they're promoting this. DC, right, so far, the DC Cinematic Universe has not been the most fan-favorited.
You know, no.
Justice League, Batman, with the exception of Wonder Woman, which everyone seemed to love.
That had crossover. Everyone loved that one.
So would you say, with Marvel not being there, with DC, one, like you kind of just said, they're going to have to stand on their own? Are people going to go into these films or into these panels because they want to see what's going on? Which I think Wonder Woman, being as popular as it was, I think that will get an attention. And I think a lot of people did like what they saw of Aquaman in Justice League. But we'll... Is this like DC's kind of make or break presentation to if they don't have to compete with Marvel and they have to promote on their own?
Yeah, I think we just found the singular story. Like the more I think about it and you bring it up now, this is the story of the Comic-Con. They can't rely on that hall being full of Marvel fans. Honestly, there was a lot of DC fans in there for sure because I was obviously there that day and I would hear the roars and DC had a ton of fans there. But you can't hide behind Marvel's crowd and the energy that's generated by the comic fans in general. They're standing alone. They have a ton of movies coming out. It makes perfect sense that they're here. There's nothing else high caliber like them around. They've been taking their lumps, except for Wonder Woman, like you said. This is a make or break thing. If they have, they've had good Hall H presentations. They had one where they, I remember I wasn't there and I really wish I was, where they're promoting Batman versus Superman. At the time, I don't think anyone had heard of it yet. And they combined the bat symbol and the Superman symbol on top, and it was like blowing your ears out. So they're capable of putting on a show. The problem is when the movie comes out, they don't deliver, and they're taking tons of hits there. So I think there's this animus towards DC, I know there is with me, that's been building. They're standing alone on Saturday. At 10:30 in the morning, first panel of the day, they'll definitely have the room full. They have a lot of stuff to show. It can't be lame, and the movies that come out after their promodium can't be lame either. They can't take too many more hits like this. Justice League was a huge flop. And apparently they had a good presentation for that. So you can present all you want, but then the fans come back the next year. They're not really holding them accountable by filling the room, but the box office is suffering. So you can't hype something and under-deliver. And I think the rumor is, I don't know if they've announced it, but I think the rumor is that Gal Gadot is going to crash the DC panel, which will blow the roof off the place. And I'll be there. I'm actually going to be there that Saturday morning for that.
You'll have to give us a review next month.
Yeah, for sure.
Personally. With Comic-Con and with these fans, like we were saying, make or break, but when you have fans that have traveled from all over the world that are just excited to be there to see whatever is thrown there, have you... Two questions. One, do you think fans will be more receptive to something just because it's at Comic-Con? And have you been to a panel that has just not gone over well? Like fans, maybe not booing, but just no reaction whatsoever.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think the two separate things. So the fans that come from around the world are the best fans at Comic-Con. The fans that go to San Diego all the time, they tend to kind of go crazy. They know the metrics of it. They plan it obsessively. It isn't their first rodeo. It might be their, like, I actually need to correct the record. I think this is my 13th. I didn't do the math right. It's my 13th Comic-Con. So I still love it and enjoy it, but some people are starting to get burned out by the crowds. But if you meet a fan from Germany or France, and I've met all these people from around the world, this is like the biggest deal of their lives, especially if it's their first one. So any first-time person, especially internationally, fantastic. What was the second question? I just forgot. I got carried away thinking about those fans.
If fans react positively because it's at Comic-Con and they're so excited to be there, and has a presentation ever fallen flat?
Oh, yeah. The dud presentation. So I remember I was there for an Edgar Allan Poe movie with Francis Ford Coppola where he gave us all a mask. I believe Val Kilmer was in it.
And it wasn't The Raven with John Cusack.
Oh, no. Okay. This might have been a masterpiece compared to what we saw. And everybody was there. So what happens in Hall H and these other panels, unfortunately, is that they stack. So, like, the room's full of people that are waiting for something else. So you might have Battlestar Galactica fans sitting through Edgar Allan Poe, or Game of Thrones fans sitting through Friday the 13th, Part 30. So it's a very weird mixture, and if that is too specific, or what they're showing is boring or interesting, like this Edgar Allan Poe thing. He handed us masks, said, pretend you're this, pretend you're that. I shot the scene three different ways, and we're all like, what is going on here? So 6,500 people completely quiet. And then you've got other ones where the director just can't shut up. It's like listening to a commentary on a DVD, where it's like, this is so boring. I see tons of people nodding off. That happens all the time in these panels. Now, the panels that are, where you're not a captive in Hall H, like I said, Hall H is a captive audience. No one really gets up and leaves. Everyone's waiting for a later program. They kind of suffer through other ones. In some of the other rooms where the lineup isn't that bad as far as people, you'll get Bradbury fans. You'll get George R.R. Martin fans. You'll get Adult Swim fans. Those are never bad panels because those are rabid fan bases that are hanging on every word. So they're not there waiting around for something else. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not, depending on how big the room. The bigger the room, the more of that goes on. But when you're in those dud panels and like the Q&As are the worst as well at the end, you just kind of have to suffer through it. I'd say about a third of the time, I want to get out of the panel that I'm in. So they're very hit and miss. But typically, the people upstage, they can feel it and they'll wrap it up and go to Q&A. So if the panel's not going well, they'll go to Q&A to liven it up. And you know it when it's happening.
Okay. And I've been to some Q&As, and it's not always the case that it will liven things up, because there are some questions that should never be asked.
Yeah. If you're relying on that to save you, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So right now, with what you know is going to be there, what are the main highlights that you're looking forward to?
Well, obviously we talked about DC. That's the one that will probably, no, not probably, it will draw the most people. I know a lot of people are excited about The Walking Dead because it's Andrew Lincoln's last appearance as Rick Grimes on the show. There's a Breaking Bad reunion that's getting a lot of buzz. The Predator panel. I know you asked me specifically, but these are a few of the other ones. I'm only there really for two things. It's for Glass with M. Night and the cast. And I am so excited about that based on Unbreakable and Split. Like, that is at 3:45 on a Friday. So excited. I don't think I'm going to camp for that Thursday night. I think I'll be able to walk into it. That's the feelings online. So I'm there for Glass. I think Jamie Lee Curtis is also there at the same. I think that's a Universal presentation.
Yeah, I think what I was reading just before we started recording is that there's no official announcement yet about Halloween, but the speculation is.
Yeah, she said she's going. Okay. So I think it's Universal doing Halloween and Glass, 3:45. So number one thing on Friday would be Glass. Number two, which is actually number one, is Godzilla, which is part of the DC Warner Brothers panel. So I'm very excited about that. They have also not announced that it's going to be there. But they released an image on the internet on Friday, which shows him breathing fire up in the air or whatever. And then the director, someone asked him on Twitter, are you going to be in San Diego? He goes, I will definitely be there. So that right there, I called up someone who helps me wait in line. I hire her to help me wait in line. She's from San Diego. And I knew right away on Saturday that's what I'm doing. So the Godzilla thing is above everything. I mean, Star Wars would be above that, but then Godzilla's right there in my childhood. So Godzilla 2 with Rodan, King Ghidorah, Mothra, all of that is Saturday, first panel, along with Warner Brothers and DC.
And we mentioned Hall H, and you just mentioned camping out and hiring people to help. in the past couple of years, has it been the same, worse, or better for camping out and getting into Hall H?
It's all worse.
It's all worse.
It's everything Hall H related has gotten worse.
Okay, so this year with a lackluster anticipation online right now, do you see it hopefully being better? Or, and I guess that's kind of the main topic of this discussion is, if this is a lackluster year, and depending on what comes out next year, will this, since tickets go on sale so far in advance, I'm going to kind of compare this to WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets go on sale before you even know what's going to
yep.
be there. If you have a bad year or a bad 2 years, then you start thinking like, maybe I want to wait and not go next year and give it a chance to kind of rebuild. Do you see that happening with fans? Or do you think this, just because this is Comic-Con, much like WrestleMania being the biggest show in the wrestling world every year, people are just going to go because it's already branded as being the thing you need to go to.
Yeah, every measurable about Comic-Con has gotten worse or better, depending on if you think more people is better. So there's 130,000 attendees. I think 250,000 people may be in that area at that time. It could be 200,000. I'm not sure. 100% hotel capacity. So I've never seen a trend other than it skyrocketing year after year, which is kind of bad for you to wait in the lines. What's interesting about this being a Comic-Con where no one knows the buzz in that Hall H, which just set the tempo, like we said, is that it puts pressure in the other areas. So because people may not be doing Hall H as much, I hope, for my sake, the rumor is that the floor is going to be someplace you can't even move. So the floor that has all the shopping and the cosplay, and Marvel has a booth there with signings with celebrities, that's typically bad anyway. And sometimes it's shoulder to shoulder, you can't move. So think if Hall H is bad, that's 7,000 people, where are they going? They're going to the floor. If they're not going there, where are they going? Offsites. Where are they going? The Fox Grill across the street from Comic-Con. So now I have to wait 3 hours to get a lunch. This has a huge ripple. And because we don't know what we're getting this year for the first time in many, many, many years, we don't know where that is going to spill out. But to answer your question about future Comic-Cons, I don't ever perceive it not being what it is now or worse as far as how many people want to go. I think 1 million people try, 100,000 get in. So that number has been escalating every year. So the experience itself has become the thing to do. You mentioned WrestleMania, Super Bowls. I think NFL was down 8%. Super Bowls typically have a bunch of people around it. So even if the events are duds, which Comic-Con's never really... I had one bad year out of 13. But even if it went to be a dud in a couple of years, somebody would come in and save it. Like, there's always been this, I don't know what it's going to be like this year. And then when you get there, you're like, oh, this is 100 times better than I thought it would be. That's every... Just a month ago, me and my friend were panicking, looking at when the schedule came out. Maybe it was 3 weeks ago, whatever it was. We were like, this looks like a dud. And we were calling it the dud. And then now we're going next week. And we're like, we can't even keep up with what we're doing. So I feel like people that go there are just going there to say that they're going. And when they get there, they discover everything else there is to do. But no one really knows. This one's really up in the air, what it's going to be like.
And you mentioned all the people. In the last few years, the off-site attractions have grown immensely. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much that even if you don't have a pass for Comic-Con, you can still go down, walk around the outside of the convention center, the downtown area, and there's a lot of stuff there, which I think is probably not helping, because then you're getting people, additional people coming in and being like, okay, if I can't get in, at least I can still do something. At least I can, you know, for me, I can go and walk around and people watch outside, or I can go to the Walking Dead maze, or last year they had Blade Runner, or, you know, all this stuff that is off-site. What is your impression of that stuff? Is it worthwhile? Is it a good thing? Or is it just helping add to the overcrowdness of Comic-Con and kind of a negative attraction?
Yeah, that's been a really debated thing, because what I've noticed this year, the offsite thing has also been very interesting, because there's no Blade Runner offsite. With HBO pulling out, there's no Game of Thrones offsite. One of the best offsites of all time. I didn't go. Apparently last year was Westworld. They're obviously not there because HBO's not there. So now all I'm seeing on Twitter are pictures of the Jack Ryan offsite. And they have a full-size helicopter, and it's an obstacle course. Everyone's freaking out about how big of a building it is. There's an offside in the Omni, which is Ready Player One. There's another offside for the off-dead. There's a new company that kind of took over this offside by the baseball field. It's like seven offsides in one. Adult Swim is back on the lawn, which is a lawn right by Hall H, which is connected to the convention center. And I have reservations for a lot of this. And you don't really know until you do it whether or not it's worth it. Sometimes you wait in line 2 hours, and you're out in 5 minutes. You're like, what was that about? Other times, like the Blade Runner line, we were there, and their VR machines broke down. So we were there 3 hours. Other times, I went to a Godzilla one. It was one of the best 10 minutes I've ever waited, and I got in 5 minutes. So the offsites is one of the things where you write down one or two you want to do every day. You wake up in the morning, call your friend, say, which line are you in? I'm in this line. And he's like, oh, I'll get you right in. And then you run 3 or 4 blocks, and you join him in line. And then you don't know until you get out whether or not it's worth it. You might sacrifice 2 hours. So I think we talked about this on last year's podcast about the Comic-Con. Time is currency down there. So the best way to play it is to pick one or two things of every type to do per day. One or two panels, one or two offsites, one or two booths for shopping, one or two restaurants, one or two parties at night. Get up at 8, get home at 2 in the morning, try to cross 6 to 8 to 10 things off your list. And you'll never know going into it. You can kind of know what you're getting with a Marvel panel, a DC panel, that people are going to blow your ears out. It's a lot of energy. You're not going to know whether you like any of this until you actually do it. And a lot of times what happens is you go there and you can't get into stuff. You get rejected. You get turned away. So a lot of it is kind of like showing up and hoping for the best. So we put all this on paper. My friend has Excel. He has grids. He has formulas. He has 10 backups per day. So the offside thing is talked about now, but no one really knows what's going on because all the pictures on Twitter are from the outside of the buildings. No one knows what's inside. They don't tell you what's on the inside.
And then the next, attraction for Comic-Con is all the exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some, before you got here, I was looking at the Super 7, which is doing a lot of Masters of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have a pop-up on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yep, they have a little store.
And I can't remember what the other company was, but they do a lot of the Universal Monster.
I saw those. Yeah.
So what, this year, what is your exclusive? Do you do exclusives? I know you're a collector, so I know you probably do them, but for the listeners out there, are the exclusives a big part of why you go to Comic-Con, and what are you looking forward to this year?
Yeah, it's a great question. So typically what I do is I read that blog, SECC blog I was talking about, and then they say this company is coming out with this, and then a week later this company added that, and they're always teasing you. So all the major pop culture companies are coming out with things they're only bringing down there. And what I do is I write down the booth number, I write what they have, and I'm only writing it down because I'm interested, the price, and then I sort by booth number. So I know if I'm starting out at one side of the convention center, the 100 level, there's a booth at 430, 830, 930, 1030, sideshows at 2600. Then I get to the 8000s and I've already hit 20 booths. That's my plan. So it's just, and then I just try to look for reasons not to buy stuff because it gets kind of crazy. But this year, out of all the stuff we just talked about, the exclusives are all-time high. I don't know what's going on. Maybe because they realize the market's so huge down there. It used to be companies would bring one thing or two things, and they would sell out on a Wednesday or Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're out of luck. Now I think they're bringing more of what they're bringing, and they're bringing more types of what they're bringing. So the stuff that I'm looking forward to, Mondo, which does these very exclusive and famously expensive after-the-fact posters, if you can find them, and vinyl. I just bought a record player, so they're coming out with the Big Trouble in Little China. I'm getting excited thinking about it because I have two people. I say I don't even have a ticket for Wednesday. They only open up the floor for the listeners. Wednesday is called a preview night. No panels. Very little offsites. You just go to this insane shopping floor. That's the only thing they have open from 6 to 9 p.m. So it's a three-hour Price is Right rush, maybe Black Friday would be a better way of putting it, where people just rush to all these booths. So I have two people because I can't get in. Going for this Mondo record that I want, which is Big Trouble Little China. And it's got custom graphics on it. They're only making 500 of them. So right off the bat, I know I'm probably screwed. My friends are going to be sitting in long lines. So that Mondo, that vinyl is really hot for me. The Super 7 thing you mentioned with He-Man, I actually ordered that. So that there's one called A Laughing Prince Adam, where it's this ridiculous, pose of him laughing, holding a sword. There's another thing I ordered, which is like an evil Supergirl from some, I'm going to butcher the name, Kotobuya. It's like a Japanese company. They did this really kind of sexy, dark version of Supergirl. So that, you have to check in and say you're at the Comic-Con with your badge, and then they mail it to you. That's a new thing that's going on. So they're actually saying, you can have a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive, but instead of sitting in long lines running your credit card for 2 hours, why don't we just verify your identity, you prepay, and then we send it to you. This is a very exciting new thing, so I'm looking forward to that. Then I have like 15 other prints, like Star Wars prints from Acme Archives. Marvel has some kind of poster for Infinity War. Maybe that's Mondo. All kinds of like collectibles. Nothing over about $50 to $100. I try to keep it at that. But there's about 15 exclusives that I want. And some of that stuff you can find on eBay after the fact. So like, people sit in line for 4 hours to buy a Transformer. It shows up on eBay for the same price it was at the Comic-Con. So people are trying to flip them too. So I usually spend about 2 hours going to all the booths. There's about 15 total that I want.
What about autograph signings? Because I know there's Autograph Alley, which is, for lack of a better term, kind of the has-beens.
Yeah.
You know. And then the floor, the main floor, also has more relevant autograph sessions.
Yeah, very relevant.
And those are usually the more expensive ones, too, because I know I remember seeing Mark Hamill there charging $100 or $150 to sign.
Yeah, that was unusual because they actually aren't supposed to charge money. You do see them there, but and we'll talk about it, but the autographs are generally given away for free and they're lottery-based.
Okay, that was actually going to be my question. Yeah. Thanks for popping that back in my head. Is a lot of stuff, the collectible exclusives are because there is a limited supply, are based on lottery systems. Is that something that has gotten bigger in the last couple of years, the lottery, or has it always been that way?
Well, they made a major improvement, which we haven't talked about any of this, but they cleaned up the autograph procedures and the exclusive procedures, where you had to go online with your ID, log in, and say, I want a Funko slot, a Hasbro slot, a Mattel slot, a UCC slot. So it's mostly the biggest distributors with the worst lines. It's not everybody. Obviously, Mondo doesn't have a lottery system. You just have to show up and hope for the best. But what's happening with that is you enter in, you know, your interest, you reserve, you put it in your shopping cart, and then they tell you randomly if you were selected. This is a huge quantum change. So in previous years, there's people in overnight lines to draw a ticket to see if they won a Funko time slot. So imagine spending an entire night sleeping on stairs, literally concrete stairs on this blue line, and you get in and you draw a ticket to see if you can meet a celebrity or if you can get an exclusive. Same thing with autographs. So what these other autographs, this is another quantum change, same thing. They also went to a lottery-based system. So you went online with your member ID. You said, I want to meet DC Entertainment people. And then they said, this is the cast of Aquaman. And then you'll say, I want to meet Breaking Bad cast or whatever. And then they would tell you randomly if you met those people, no more sitting in a huge line to run into, you know, someplace, get a ticket and see if you met those people. So this is a huge deal because now you know, now I struck out on almost all of this stuff, by the way. So now I know going into it, I don't have to try for any of this. And all those lines of people are going to be removed. It's only going to be people with those reservations. This just started this year. So that's a big, big change. And apparently Marvel has the Infinity War people coming. That's a last second thing. Certain booths also, like Dark Horse, if you show up at their booth, as soon as the door opens, people sprint to their booth and they draw like these beads to see if they get to meet people. So they're not all based on an online system. Some of them are based on you go to the booth and hopefully you draw a ticket. Most of the time when you do that, you have no chance. By the time the doors open and there's 20,000 people to get in line for the doors to open, by the time you get to that booth, it's over. The Marvel booth, famously, they'll open up the door and there's already like a sign saying no more autographs available. So like, who are they letting in? You know, they might be letting in their friends. So yeah, it went to a lottery-based system. I think they really cleaned it up, and it's going to prevent those overnight stays from people.
And we were talking earlier about the floor being so jam-packed that it's, you know, sometimes barely accessible to walk through. And I understand that they have the floor laid out by category. So at one end, you have all your merchandise, T-shirts, stuff. Then you have comic, actual comic books. the center is mostly your big studio presentations, and then you have Artist Alley. Do you think it would help if they rearranged the floor to not put all the big stuff right back to back to each other?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, even Funko's in a corner and you can't move back there. And that really hurts. Like, so for example, some of these booths are even located by small artists and they call small press. So imagine if you're a small company and you're putting out a book of ElfQuest, or you're putting out Mouse Guard, or you're an artist that did Mouse Guard, for example. People can't even get to meet that person. Can't shop. There's a Peanuts booth that's hard to get to. I don't really know what they can do with it, because I think they're just letting too many people on the floor. So by them saying 130,000 people overall, here's a door to the floor. That's the problem. And you got to feel bad, too, for kind of a little off topic, but for people that are disabled. I always feel bad for them because they can't even get around on the floor. And people are, like, walking all in front of them, and they're in a wheelchair. And because the floor is a madhouse, people don't know who's next to them. They can't get around very easily. But separate of that, I don't know if rearranging would make a difference, because there's too many places that draw the crowds that you put them all on one end, no one will be able to get to that end. They're interspersed right now, so you can kind of hug some of the walls and get around it. I just look at, like, if you're kind of organized and you have a red line, you say, I'm not waiting in this line if it's over 50 people. I know I can't go to Funko because I had to win the lottery. Why would I want to go to the Funko area where you can't move? Because all those people in line are just staring and taking pictures. They don't even have lottery tickets half the time. So you know year after year, ooh, I'm not going over there, I'm not going over there. And you got to have a plan. Like I said, I have a piece of paper sorted by number. So I'm not walking around going, oh, I'm in the 800s, now I got to go back to the 8,000s. No, I was already in the 7,000s. I'm already in the 7,500. So this is about you knowing it and experiencing. But I think I mentioned this last year. I think people that haven't been there before, if they're young, they're going to love it and they're going to be blown away. I think if you're a little bit older and you have any kind of agoraphobia or frustration or lack of patience, this is not the place for you. And the floor included, being the worst example. Of wanting to do something and not be able to get to it. Or not be able to... It's frustrating when you're not even able to buy something. You can see it, and you can't get to it. You know, it's funny. Like, you go to Mondo, and you're like, I want that Jurassic Park board game. And anytime you go there, we're talking Thursday. The convention's been around one day. Oh, no, we sold out of that last night. On preview night? Well, then what about everyone else? We don't have any more. Or you go to the front of the line, and they put up a little sign saying... now sold out of all, you know, Bob Ross collectibles. And you're like, oh, I was in this line for 90 minutes. I got to the front and the inventory ran out. This is all stuff that happens down there. So it's tough.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, because this stuff is exclusive, so that would mean limited supply.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd also think that they know they're going to be there for 3 or 4 days. You've got, you know, you said 130,000 people coming through. Wonder what their supply is. Like, how much are they bringing in? Because are they shortchanging it so that they can make these more collectible?
Bingo.
Even then, if someone gets one and then flips it on eBay, unless it's the person that works for the company, like, why not try to give the most, you know, the most merchandise to the fan base?
Yeah.
So that you can make the money too. Because if you're selling out on Thursday, you have 3 other days that you've lost money because you didn't have merchandise to sell.
I think they're really smart about it. I mean, it's frustrating as a consumer, but so let's take Mondo. So Mondo has 500 records of Big Trouble Little China. Well, they probably have 4,000 to 5,000 of other records. So they go, if I can get someone in here, they'll buy this record. Then they're going to see our booth. They're going to want other records. Now, they have a limited run of their regular records as well, but it's not going to be as small as probably that Big Trouble Little China run. In fact, I think you can still buy the Jaws soundtrack from John Williams, major movie, on their website. So what they do is they kind of create this hype of like, oh my God, I gotta get this. And then you're at the booth and you kind of feel like, well, they got other stuff I want too. And then the next year they come out with another exclusive, you can try even harder. So they create this want. This is what Funko does a great job of. They create this thing where some of it is attainable and then some of it's unattainable, but it's getting you to the booth and it's getting you to see all their other products. So it's kind of, you go to a movie theater, you buy a movie ticket, then you're buying popcorn, then you're buying pop, and then you're buying something. It's like they're drawing you in for a reason. So I do wonder why they're only making 500 or something, but if you think about it, they have maybe 30 other products there, they're selling a lot more than 500 of those. So I think their inventory is capped with that one or two things. It draws you in there, and then they're going to sell a lot of their other things. Or they have probably boxes and boxes of that. So I think their overall sales are really high, and they're not driving, they're not going down there just to sell an exclusive. That's just like a little tease or a big tease to get people in their booth.
I mean, that's a, I guess, a valid point. I would just think you would definitely want to try to have merchandise available every day, and maybe even do like 500 a day.
Yeah.
So you can get people to come back to your booth on a daily basis.
I have seen that. There has been some booths where they've had a pretty good amount and they release them daily. Mm-hmm. What was it? It might have been Deadpool had a Blu-ray that was signed by Ryan Reynolds. And they said, we're going to give out five. And people were complaining they're gone every time I go to their booth. But they're saying something like 200 or 300 a day. So that's smart, too. Then you have 1,000 overall, 1,500 overall. Mm-hmm. And then people come to your booth every single day. Yeah, and they're not losing out on a Thursday with it all being gone.
Right. And speaking of Deadpool, apparently Deadpool 2 is going to have a screening. I saw that.
There's a rumor the cast is showing up, and then people think that's impossible. No one knows what's going on there.
I know. I've heard rumors that Ryan Reynolds is in our area doing the international work, so.
Yeah, we'll see.
Possibly. Going back to the floor being overcrowded real quick, I'm thinking cosplay is a big part of Comic-Con, obviously. There are a lot of people who do cosplay in costumes that hinder other people's mobility.
Yeah.
Say. Do you think, and I don't even know, if you could enforce this or whatever, but there should be a cap on size limit, too, for costumes on the main floor to avoid gridlock?
Yeah, I really don't think those guys are the problem. Typically, they're outside of the floor in the carpeted kind of walk around area.
More to be seen.
Yeah, more to be seen because they want to be interviewed and they want tons of people coming up to them. Or they won't be on the sidewalk because there's too much foot traffic. But there's that, once you walk in and they scan your badge or whatever, there's the inner or the outer ring area, and that's where they are. And then they may go on the floor. I don't see those guys on the floor very much. The problem is that all the people are taking pictures of them. So they walk around showing off something cool. It could be a large costume. But then there's like 20 people that are like blocking the sidewalk with professional cameras. Those guys are the most annoying. The guys that show up with pro cameras are the most annoying. Like, they have to do a setup with a tripod. Then they have to turn on the light. And then if there are people that do video blogs from around the world, they're going to be talking and translating, and they're holding a huge circle that blocks traffic because they need to get this for their show. They're not paying attention to anything going on around them. So yeah, the actual individual cosplayers, they're great. They usually keep it moving. It's everyone else that's stopping them. But yeah, I don't see those guys on the floor. I don't think, sometimes with those costumes, you can't even see. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't see, like, for example, a Bumblebee walking around on the floor, because Bumblebee would just be a wrecking ball. It probably would rack up like a $10,000 break it, buy it, right, type situation.
Yeah, good point. Hey, as we wrap this up, I have just a few more questions, and I feel like this has been more of an interview than a discussion. So you go to several other cons throughout the year. In your opinion, I think we could kind of address this last year, but just to reiterate for people who didn't listen then, do you think Comic-Con, if someone wants to go to a con, would you recommend going to the San Diego version, or would you recommend another con around the United States?
I think everybody should do San Diego. The problem with San Diego is getting into it. So like I said, 1 out of 10 people get in. Maybe it's probably, I've heard as little as 5%. I think it's more like 8 to 10%. But I think if you could ever go to San Diego, you should try every year, because it's so hard to get in, and you would just have to go if you win it. All the other ones, every other convention you can get into. I bought Star Wars Celebration tickets in Chicago, and they're still on sale. So Comic-Con sells out instantly. So get that off the table. Go if you want to go. But I would recommend, if you could actually sequence it, you should go to a medium to large size one to be prepared, like a WonderCon, a Kamikaze. I think it's called Comic-Con, LA Comic-Con now. It would break you into the floor aspect of it and the cosplay. They don't have offsites. So the other Comic-Cons, they don't have offsites. They don't have big name autographs, typically. They don't have a Hall H experience. So all you're going to emulate with another convention is a shopping floor. Some small panels, and maybe some people show up at a booth that you can take a picture of. Comic-Con, and I mentioned this last year, is above and beyond. It's a mecca. It's unlike all those other ones. So when people compare San Diego to anything else, it's not accurate. It's so above and beyond. It's not like comparing a football game to a Super Bowl. It's like another category of its own. So I would recommend, if you could game it, do a Comic-Con 50 to 80,000 range, and then go to 130,000 like San Diego. And just be prepared. You have to have a lot of energy, a lot of patience. You're not going to sleep. And if you're doing it right, you know, 8 to 2 in the morning minimum. If you can't commit to 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 hours a day, that is not the convention for you. Go to the other ones where you show up for 3 hours. The other ones, I do 2 to 3 hours a day. I don't do 16. There's not enough stuff to do.
All right. And then my last question is, so you've been this 13th Comic-Con. When are you going to cosplay?
Oh, man, I've been asked that so many times.
And first, what would you cosplay?
Yeah, my wife's going to cosplay.
Okay.
And now I'm, like, blanking out on the race that has the tendrils.
Is she a Twi'lek again?
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I don't. She's going to kill me when she hears this. So she has this unbelievable Twi'lek costume. And whenever she wore it last year, I believe, and she got stopped constantly. So she did it one day because you want to be able to walk around and check out stuff. But getting back to me, I don't know. Like, I'm so intimidated by how crazy the cosplay is down there. Like, you can't show up in a Halloween costume. If you do that, it's, like, considered hilarious.
Unless you're doing it ironically.
Yeah, ironically. Because there's even cheap costumes that are really funny, but everyone has put so much time, money, and thought into it. And it's, to use another sports analogy that's overused, it is a Super Bowl of cosplayers. So if I got, you know, people flying in for Capcom characters from Japan, and then a guy who's been working out for 30 years who's playing He-Man, he looks exactly like a real He-Man. I mean, I could show up and put on a Joker outfit. I'm never going to look tall and thin and exactly like Heath Ledger, because there's 10 of those guys that look perfect. So my wife's beautiful. She can pull this off. It's a very, you know, Etsy built costume. With for me, I can't put that much thought into it. I'm racing around thinking about too many other things. And also too, the heat down there is a consideration. Like, do you want to be walking around? I mean, think how gamey a Darth Vader or a Stormtrooper is around 2 p.m. when they walk into a sports grill. I mean, believe me, you don't want to be anywhere near that, you know, Imperial offense. So I've been threatening cosplay. I think maybe I'll, like, try a cheap mask or something. But it's not in the cards this year, I don't think.
Okay. Actually, I have one more thought that probably a bigger discussion. We'll get into the serious issue now at the end of the show. You know, Chris Hardwick, who has been a big player in in the nerd community and Comic-Con. He was supposed to host a bunch of panels this year. He is gone due to allegations against him by a former girlfriend.
Yeah.
Do you think that will have a major impact on, not on Comic-Con itself, but will there, do you think there will be, like, protesters set up? Do you see anything? Or do you think by the time this has happened, this is all kind of blown over and people are just going to be doing their normal Comic-Con experience?
Well, I think for the panel he's really associated with, which is The Walking Dead, and The Walking Dead superfan Yvette Nicole Brown is taking over for him, which is interesting. They're very good friends, obviously. I think there'll be a little bit of a cloud in that Hall H for that particular event. I think because of how many Comic-Con is nothing but distractions. So I think it will have zero impact. I mean, me and my wife talk about all the time because we're big Chris Hardwick fans, and we're still stunned by this news. And it really sent shockwaves in these blogs coming off the Comic-Con, but that was a while ago, and now that we're approaching and we're worried about toothpaste and where are we going to have beer at midnight, and we're like, Chris Hardwick? I mean, yeah, we would have seen him probably a couple times. I think the whole situation is so disappointing. I don't think it'll have any real effect outside of the Walking Dead panel, where people will be thinking, isn't Chris usually here? I'll be curious to see if Yvette says something about it, if AMC makes a comment on it, because he's so tied into that show. But that was a big blow to, like, when we were all thinking it was going to be a dud, that was a big negative cloud that kind of entered. And we still read, we're always on Twitter trying to find out, he's got a bunch of people backing him. And then I think her name is Chloe, mm-hmm. that his ex-girlfriend, yeah. accused him of all that. And she's kind of faded away and not really responded. And my wife listened to his podcast all the time. We don't know what to make of that. It's like there's 10 people defending him, and then it's her and a few other people, including some Nerdist people. But I don't think it will have any, to answer your question, no real tangible effect on the Comic-Con. But it's definitely a sad footnote. It's sad for her if this is true. And it's, for the nerd community, it's a big blow to like one of our icons. You know, we really, he was one of the guys that, as Comic-Con came up, he came up with it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say he's part of the success exclusively, but he's one of the reasons the Comic-Con got a high profile. And his nerd empire was built off of some of that. So it's a down thought for sure to have. It will be weird being in there and not seeing him, for sure.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens. And we will, when we get back together next month for not an evolution of Blockbusters, mm-hmm. but another topic, we'll start off the show with your recap and thoughts and see how next year is looking based on this year.
Yeah.
So I know you need to probably start getting some sleep in for this week.
Oh, for sure.
But anyway, great to have you coming on board monthly now. And like I said, we'll come up with a show topic name. And I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on this Comic-Con and see your post and messages. And good luck with all the exclusives and waiting and sleeping outside.
Yes, I will destroy Facebook with my post that hopefully more than just you will like, but hopefully you'll like it.
Definitely. And if I get the Positive Cynicism website up and running this week, we'll have to throw some stuff up on there.
But, okay.
All right. Great. If you're listening and you are going to be at Comic-Con, you can shoot me a line at Chad Smart on Twitter. And I don't know if I will be there. There's debate of possibly going down again to be one of those annoying people that just go down on Saturday and roam around the outskirts.
You need to be there.
We'll see.
We'll talk.
We'll talk. But yeah, if you're going to be there, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. If you've been to Comic-Con, let us know what your thoughts are. And if you have any, things you would like to see changed or whatever with Comic-Con, let us know. But until then, until next time, question everything. Do something positive. I almost forgot my own tagline.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.